sister's saying in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around.
Ayo's house
in the middle of our street.
Ayo's house
in the middle of
Isle's House, episode 44, I think. It's possible. Before we get into it, we got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN, Rocco at Pizza Sports Guy, Jack at Isle's Den. Follow the podcast at Isle's House. Subscribe wherever you get your favorite podcast, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, YouTube, whatever it is. We're there. Hit the subscribe button, then unsubscribe, then resubscribe, then rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. I did that like a week ago, I think. And when I went to go check, I refreshed the reviews. And it actually worked. We got a few extra 5-star reviews. So thank you to whoever did that. All right, the rest of the housekeeping. Yep. Oh, I got it the first time. All right. If you're watching on YouTube, which you should also subscribe to, that barcode in the top right corner, that's for our merch store. I'm rocking the Casa hat. Rocco's rocking the Casa hat. Jack needs to go back to school and take a marketing lesson because he's not wearing any Isle's House merch, but that's okay. If you're on YouTube, that bar that's scrolling at the bottom, patreon.com/Isle's House, subscribe, join the chat. It's the best Islanders group chat on the internet. I actually just dropped some Quinn Hughes sources in the insider tier. And of course, we are brought to you by the fine folks at Rust and Gold in Huntington. If you're looking for a great place to watch an Islanders game, great food, great drinks, great atmosphere, give them a shout. And if you're a Patreon member, there is a discount for you waiting in our Discord. Gentlemen, we're here. We're off with Jackie recaps.
We are off, and the Islanders are taking off with a 6-3 win last Thursday over the Colorado Avalanche. Welcome back, Brock Nelson, and it was Cal Ritchie showing some flashes as to why we traded for him. And it was a 6-3 win, pretty dominant and kind of surprising just because the Avalanche had one regulation loss. Really good win for the Islanders, obviously one that's going to give you major confidence. And then back on the road to Tampa, who they narrowly beat 2-1 last Tuesday. So you knew Tampa was going to be hungry, but before the game, I want to say Nikita Kucherov. And there was one more significant, Vasilevsky, who I think now is on injured reserve. That's going to be a little bit. So they were both out and injured. Brayden Point was still out, and the lack of finishing touch really showed for them. Ilya Sorokin was fantastic in every situation he was tested in. And it was one of those games where your goalie and defense keeps you in it on the road and you just need to find that one. And it was Cal Ritchie who went between his legs for the game winner. And Casey Cizikas added the empty net for the second straight game, by the way. And two wins over two great teams brought us to Sunday, where little bit of a scheduled loss. You got your backup goalie in there. You're going up against the Florida Panthers, who are kind of desperate at this point in the season for some points. They've not gotten off to the best start, and the Islanders fell behind early, and they were down 2-1, I want to say, going to the third. This was the only game I didn't watch, but when you see it's 2-1 against Florida, that's one team. They don't care. They'll let you in their zone. They're just going to lock it down for 20 minutes, and that's what they did. And eventually they were opportunistic, finding one, I think, with like 6 minutes left. That's when I was able to turn the game on, and it was pretty much over from there. But the fact that they even hung in there against what is going to be a desperate team and the Stanley Cup champions, I was not annoyed with that result. But maybe you guys are going to say otherwise. But overall, very successful week.
I don't know if either of us would say that we're annoyed with
– No, you can't.
Those results. I mean, I'm annoyed at the Florida results. But
well, no, just the Florida game. I didn't watch it, so I don't know if there was anything like disgraceful that happened there. I thought Riddick was probably fine. Yeah. Like, was there anything egregious about that game in general?
No. If that's the game you missed, Jack, I feel like you didn't miss much. It wasn't the most entertaining game. It was Florida playing Florida fashion with the heavy forecheck, and I just don't think we handled it that well. We got hemmed in a good bit, and it just really outplayed us. Like, it wasn't – we didn't play terribly, but it was just a dull nothing game. Like, that's one we – like, you look back at, you won't even remember it. Because
I don't like when we play teams with these, like, elite blue lines with these big-bodied defensemen and these forechecking teams. Like, the Capitals and Panthers are not matchups I like for this team at all. They just – they – they just both play a style that
the first place Washington Capitals, by the way.
Are they there first now?
They're in first. 18-9-3, 39 points. They're ahead of the Hurricanes, who are in second by 3 points, and the Islanders by a total of 4 points.
Just end the season now, please.
Well, you know what, Jack? I think all of two of mine and two of yours preseason projections would come true if we froze the season. In the words of our president, stop the count right now. It would be 39, 36, 35. Islanders, third place in the Metro, as you predicted. I had the Capitals. I forget if I had them one or two.
I think you had the Capitals falling off, buddy. I remember
those words. Is that a joke? I was the only one who said that.
It was Capitals regression was said at one point.
Capitals regression has different meanings. Like they had like a ridiculous amount.
I had them making the playoffs and finishing top three in the Metro. And everyone, I poo-pooed everyone. Go back and listen to the tape. I poo-pooed everyone who said that they were going to regress poorly because I didn't see it. I thought they were
long way to go. So we'll see. But yeah, the Caps are legit. Yeah, I agree, Jack. We have trouble with these bigger teams that play the heavy forecheck because, you know, if they have a group, and it's not honestly with the Panthers. Obviously, they have absolute stud forwards, but as far as the defensive group, it's really by committee. Their best defenseman is a full-on defensive defenseman, I would say, right?
With Forsling. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it's a bunch of, no disrespect, but just a lot of guys around him that just fit. Like Seth Jones came, just fit. Other guys come, they just fit. And then they let that guy go, bring in a new fit. So credit to them and their system. That's why they've won the Cups. And honestly, that's why I still see them making the playoffs. I know it's tough, they're banged up, but I just think eventually they're going to come back and make it. So well, I don't really get upset about that type of loss because.
But I do, and I'm kind of surprised that you don't, Rocco, because I feel like you and I are on the same.
Mind you, Ethan. Part of me not getting upset is the two games before, like you dominate Colorado and you find a way in Tampa. So
but that's the thing, though.
That like, one is icing on the cake.
You would agree, though, that they got outplayed by Tampa. Like it wasn't like a one sided tilt, but that's not like the Islanders played well all the way through and deserved to win that game. That was like
no, they got outplayed.
They got outplayed. But like what frustrates me is like you go up against the best team in the NHL. Honestly, like when all is said and done, this year's Avalanche may be one of the best regular season teams that we've seen in our lifetime. If like this pace keeps up and this talent level like doesn't fall off and get injured, like they are unbelievable to beat the brakes off them 6-3 like that. And then, all right, like fine, I get it. It's kind of like the NFL any given Sunday, whatever. Like you find a way against Tampa, but Florida, who's missing Barkov and Tkachuk, who also played the night before, who was also playing their backup. It's like, okay, like Jack is going to look at this game and it's going to be a throwaway in his mind. And he's going to be like, I'm just going to look at the Tampa game and the Colorado game.
It's not a throwaway,
let me finish my thought.
All right.
Let me finish.
Respectfully.
That's like a throwback to episode one.
Yeah, it's a throwback. Yeah.
Like, I can't just throw that game away. To me, like, those two games on the road against both Florida teams are yet again sobering reminders that even though this team is presently third in the Metro, even though they have outperformed my personal expectations, it is still a sobering reminder, and I think everyone would agree, that they are still missing a number of pieces from being like consistently legitimate contender. And I think that someone had DM'd me about this a couple days ago, but like I feel like a lot of the fan base has Stockholm syndrome from growing up with an organization that was broke as shit and played in an empty arena and was terrible for most of their lives. And they put those trots Eastern Conference Finals runs on a pedestal, right? It's like, I don't want to just like squeak into the playoffs and then get the brakes beaten off me by one of these Florida teams or by Carolina. You know what I mean? Like, to me, that's not good enough. Like, we've gotten so close to the tip of the mountain that like, when you show up to Florida on the dad's trip and you get outplayed and you eke one out against Tampa, but then you get thoroughly shut down by a team that's at the bottom of their bottom of the division. I think, what are they right now? They're bottom. I think that at one point, like a week ago, they were in last place. They're missing their two best offensive players. It's like, come on, guys. Like, I get it. This is like, you don't want to get upset about some Sunday regular season game against the Florida Panthers, but it's like, they're still missing guys.
I agree with everything there, Ethan. My only thing is, and the reason I'm not totally upset by this is because, as you said, we're really not there yet. And I've never, even though the wins are fun and we're a vibes team, and I do want them to make the playoffs, certain matchups you could see we're not there.
Like, 100%.
Avalanche game was great. And to Jack's point, the craziest part about that game, they dominated and it never was really in doubt. Well, we were up 5-0, I believe.
3-0, 4-1, 5-1. It was,
yeah, we were up a good bit and they never got closer than two. And even when they got two, it was like, all right, you got two, but there's not too much. It's third period. It's
4-2.
Now. Yeah. And yeah, it's just that game is, you know, you just tip your cap to the Isles. They played so great. And that, to me, that performance was more of a flash in the pan just on that night. Like,
it was an outlier performance.
I was literally watching that game and one of my cousins was texting me and I said, if we played this team in a 7-game series, meaning Colorado, all, like, again, we're playing great, we would have no chance.
No shot.
No chance. Did you see that? Who was that one goal that Makar set up with Lekkonen? They were playing a different game on that goal. Like, they're so,
might have been Natchez. So
strong. What's that?
Was it Natchez?
No.
He had, like, some crazy assists.
Makar made a move, came into the slot, and then instead of shooting, passed it to Lekkonen, and he scored on, like, a no-angle goal.
That's, oh, yeah,
no chance on. Like, only a few teams could make that play, and you'd kind of need a Makar-esque player to make that play. So it's just, they're so good. They really are. Like, I kind of was writing them off a little bit. I thought they were a little top-heavy.
But no,
the top is just so good. It doesn't matter. And it makes everyone better. Like, I watch guys that I think Olofsson they have, right? Like, he was always just kind of an average player, and you see him with them, and he just looks good. They just plug guys.
Let me ask one question.
Yes.
And I really only want to spend 10 seconds on this.
Yeah.
Presently, right now, you have to pick between McKinnon and McDavid. Who are you picking?
McDavid, but it's closer than
I'm picking McKinnon right now.
Why?
I think he's averaging like over 2 points per game. He's a freak and a force. Carter,
who do I want to win a series?
Say that again.
In like who I think's winning the Hart this year?
Like if you had to pick one player to be on your team this year, not talking like career long.
McDavid's by himself for me still.
Okay, I'm picking McKinnon.
Jack.
Just this year, like this year's performance has been absurd.
If the better player this year is actually McKinnon, but all time, if I'm picking one,
of course,
for my
all
team,
time it's McDavid.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm saying that's why I said this year.
This year it's McKinnon. I agree with you, Ethan.
But get to the playoffs, fresh start. Who do you take
this year?
The numbers don't matter anymore. Who do you take?
McKinnon now just deserves so much respect. I
mean, McDavid went to back to back Stanley Cups.
And McKinnon won one.
Yeah, his team was fucking loaded.
And it's loaded. He's
climbed the mountain.
That's what I like about this Avs team is the Bruins a few years ago were like the best regular season, whatever. We all knew there was an element of like randomness. Like this team is a wagon, like an actual wagon.
Level of talent. Like I think Bruins team was super deep. This Avs team, like they have two of the best five players in the league. You could argue two of the best, maybe three.
Yeah. And Cal Makar, there's an argument, given that he's a defenseman, that he's literally the best player in the NHL, even when McDavid's going, just because his skill set is so rare. But back to us, Ethan, the only thing they've lost, that was their first loss on a back-to-back this season. So I don't throw it away for nothing. But, you know, you're asking a lot to go on defeat. You win your first second half back-to-back games, the first four of the season. This is a really condensed schedule. They're gonna have nights like that, and so is every team. Like the schedule is really something else this year. Like there's a reason that Adam Fox and Jack Hughes, Palmieri, like these guys are going to get hurt, and we've kind of
two guys that are constantly hurt. But
yeah, is Fox hurt a lot?
No, I'm talking about Palmieri and Hughes.
Fox has been banged up a bit, but not like these other guys.
Yeah, but
Hughes' latest sponsorship. It's some like hospital or medical system. It's something. Oh, it's something medical related.
It's so funny with the timing with Hughes because he's such a good player, but just the social media posts sometimes make me laugh. Like the day it got announced that they might not play because the rink's too small, whatever, he posts like a Ralph Lauren and all US stuff. Like, Jack, not the fucking time, man. God damn.
He needs Tate McRae's social person to be running his
he does
stuff. All right, back to us. What are we talking about right now?
No, just saying that I disagree with you a little bit there, just because it's the first, like, this is their first back-to-back loss of the season on the second half. It's going to happen. You have
in most circumstances, like, I'm not upset, but like this Florida team, stylistically, I understand they're a matchup, but objectively, they're not good this year. They're banged up. They were also in a back-to-back with their backup goalie. It's like, all right, you're a third-place team in the Metro. You've been playing really good hockey this year. Like, personally, it's a game I expect you to win. Like, if this is a back-to-back against Vegas, who had off the night before, or against the Devils, like, I don't know. It just bothers
me. Can I be honest? I think, and Jack alluded to it before, I think we really struggle against bigger teams.
We do.
Yeah.
Capitals, Florida.
Because we're not big.
We struggle with Boston. We wouldn't go near Sidorov when he gets the puck.
No.
It's like we need a couple dogs on this team. I think we're as much as we're missing a little bit of skill, we need a couple big guys that like to hit a little bit as well.
But it's not just the size. And I think, honestly, like Florida and to an extent the Capitals, even years ago, kind of figured out the meta early of just big and fast. The Islanders do not have big and fast. They've got some big. They've got Andrews Lee. They've got Maxim Tsipilkov. Both guys at this point skate like they got fucking stones on their feet. But they don't have like those big dogs. They don't have the Tom Wilsons. I mean, hell, even Ovechkin to an extent. Florida's loaded with these big, fast dudes.
Well, that's drafting too, right? Drafting,
100%.
Scouting, and picking up these guys. Like, that's what you hope for when
you draft. This is just like such a boomer take, but it's like, this is why I look at teams like San Jose and like Chicago to an extent, like, okay, like you're drafting like all these smaller, unbelievably skilled guys. And I'm very anxious to see how they perform come playoff time when the rink shrinks and you're against these fucking absolute monsters. Because, all right, like you can put up 40 goals and 70 assists and everyone's freaking out and loving you. But as we know, the playoffs are a different animal.
Yeah, and it's just – and I agree with those draft picks because I think at the top you just take the best player.
No, 100%. It's just how you supplement
the team. Find those diamonds in the rough, right? Like, that's what Florida does. That's what Tampa's done for so long. That's what we're hoping to do. Like, when you draft a guy like Daniil Prokhorov, you're hoping he's going to be.
Yes.
That's guys like that. Even Aitchison. Like, Aitchison could be that way. He loves to hit. He's a big dude. That's what you're drafting, and we just got to hope because you draft these guys and then you need 2-3 years of development. You see what you got, so – in regards to that, like we keep saying, we're just a couple years behind some of these other teams.
Yeah. Like, if you look at the Caps roster,
they're huge.
Bro, Protoss is 6'6". They got Baby Pro coming up, who's also 6'6".
How heavy is Protoss that's in the league right
250.
Now? 250.
250? Holy shit. PLD is 6'4", 220. Dylan Strom is 6'4", 200. Tom Wilson is 6'4", 225. Carlson is small big. Guy. He's 6'3", 240. Ovechkin's listed 238. That motherfucker might be 260 at this point.
Big boy.
Like, dude, they're just loaded with big dudes.
That's the thing.
Even Ryan Leonard is no small dude. He's 6'1", 205.
Yeah, he's big. And keep in mind, Ryan Leonard's young. He's going to gain another probably 10 pounds.
You know what? This is fucking crazy. The Capitals on their active roster don't have anyone who's under 5'11".
That's crazy.
They have three dudes 5'11". They're the shortest guys on the team. Bo, Ethan Frank, and Rasmus Sandin. 5'11". Everyone else is bigger.
Yeah, they have a big team.
Hold on. Now I'm, like, curious. Let me look up the Islanders and see.
We have a lot of small guys, dude. We have Shabanov and Drouin and
Barzal.
So it's really not that big of a difference, but it's definitely like the Islanders small dudes, like they're not even
Boquist.
Shabanov, JGP, Drouin, Cizikas, Ethan Bear is listed here. That's five guys who are 5'11 or shorter. But then they have like a bunch of dudes who are like 6 foot, 6'1". They don't have like that higher end distribution. Like, I mean, Sorokin and Riddick are like top five in height, and they're both 6'3".
When we made our runs, we had big teams too.
Yeah.
We weren't the most skilled by any means, but we had big teams.
Like, the biggest regular player the Islanders have is Mayfield, who's 6'4", 215. Andrews Lee on offense, 6'3", 234. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
They're not a heavy team. Well, Bo's like Bo's fairly heavy. He's 225.
Yeah, Bo's a big boy.
But that's like the pressure.
Pelic are pretty big guys.
Oh, Ethan Bear needs to go on a diet.
What is he?
5'11", 220.
He might just be yoked.
Maybe.
But Pulak and Pelic are pretty big.
Yeah, but again, it's like this. It's the skating. Like all the guys that I listed for the Capitals are like high end guys.
And you notice too, those type of teams when we play them, what are they saying with Schaefer? Just get a piece of them. So like Clutter said it on the broadcast. Just get a piece of them, slow them down. You don't need to bury him, but you need to bump him. This way he's thrown off just a little bit. And they do it, and they do it well. And we don't play the same way.
You know what I feel like right now? I feel like Johnny Drama looking at dudes' calves. Except I'm looking at NHL rosters like, bro, like, are you really 6'5"? Are you 6'5" on skates?
I mean, there's some guys. Like, even you said Bo's 5'11". I think Bo might be a little smaller than that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of these heights are generous. Yeah.
Like, who knows what Shab and all back.
Dude, Shab is listed at 5'9". There's no way.
He's probably 5'7".
He might be 5'9" on skates.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Raced in the East. Presently, in the Metropolitan Division, 7 points separate first from last. Discuss.
This is a tight, tight division. When you look at every team top to bottom, like, there's – I really thought the Penguins – were probably overhated when you looked at their opening night roster, but for them to be like, what, they're 14-7 and got a couple OT losses sprinkled in there.
I ask this honestly, Jack, because they're not a team that I particularly cared about or paid attention to. They were awful last year.
Yeah.
Crosby's old, Malkin's old.
Yeah.
Is it all coaching?
A lot of it has to do with it.
Jari putting up a career year.
Well, they were trying. The goaltending is definitely one of the catalysts for them. Like, that's a major outlier. They were not projected to get that goaltending. It's probably like in terms of goals saved above expected, I bet you they're like 25% more in that category than they're supposed to be.
Jari is 11th right now.
You know what? With I think
11 goals saved above expected.
You know what I think it is a bit in Pittsburgh too, whether it was said to them or not. I think it's in the
last ride.
It's in the back of all of those vets' minds that, like, if you don't do it right now, you're getting broken up.
That's exactly what's been. I've been reading a lot. I've been reading a lot about their team, and you're right. So Malkin was told before the season that this is his last season in Pittsburgh, and he has just played with like another level of fire this season. Also, there's a lot of passive aggressiveness in their quotes and in their comments about what's gone on this season. And a lot of it's been directed at Mike Sullivan. Most notably, Erik Karlsson was talking about how he just has to, he's not trying to be a player that he isn't. Even Ryan Graves said something because he's been playing well. It's just a lot of players are getting a chance to kind of be themselves out there. They found a good partner with Erik Karlsson. That would be Parker Watherspoon. Sadly, he's actually putting together a really nice season right now. And they also have their own 18-year-old that flies under the radar because Schaefer has taken up all the attention.
He's slowed down quite a bit, but yes. Yeah. He got off to a hot start.
But give him credit. He made the team.
100%.
Yeah, and they tried to put him next to Crosby, and it wasn't working because he's a natural center. So they put him back down, and he started to play really well again. They made a couple of quietly like good signings, and it confused me at the time because I thought that they were going to try and be bad this year straight up because the seller's market's kind of thin, and they have this player, Anthony Mantha, that they signed in free agency. He's always been a good player. It's actually someone I wanted the Islanders to sign, but instead they went out and got Drouin, which – I'm happy about, but Mantha is probably a guy I thought that they were going to get a bunch of stats and then trade him at the trade deadline. But I don't know. They, you're definitely onto something with that take though. The vets know this is like their last chance there, especially Malkin, and he's doing everything he can, but they have problems. Like Letang, age is catching up. He looks pretty bad.
Rocco and I know.
We know. Yeah. Dynasty team.
Oh,
no, spin that. He's been fantastic. Someone trade for him.
Yeah, he's been struggling, but you know they don't even have Raquel right now, and they're still playing pretty well.
Do they keep it up is the question. Like, do you guys see Pittsburgh as a playoff team when push comes to shove?
Well, here's the thing: those players are so Crosby's going to go to the Olympics, Karlsson's going to go to the Olympics, And, you know, they're really reliant on these players getting older, you know, just like the fatigue can catch up to them throughout the season. Obviously Malkin isn't going for political reasons, but so he'll get a break, but I don't know if they're hanging around there and the games become important in March, the Penguins really have a chance to make the playoffs this season. That's really what's been going on there, though. I've been intrigued by their start because I'm as shocked as anyone.
We think too, like when you think about it in the Metro, there's a lot of new coach bumps, right? You got Philly, you got Pittsburgh, and did anyone else get a? Did Columbus get a new one, or it's same?
Columbus has Everson. He's just a good coach, but with Philly, he's coming
like halfway through. Last year. So new-ish, but I don't know. It's tough. Like if you really look at the Metro and say, who's to make it? It's hard because do the Devils get healthy? Because if the Devils really get healthy, they could jump right up, get hot, make it.
Some of these teams,
Philly's right there, Pittsburgh's right there.
If I had to bet on one of like these teams that you really wouldn't expect, I wouldn't bet on Columbus because I think that roster wise they still got ways to go. But the Flyers, they've gotten significant improvement from Jamie Drysdale this year. And they have a lot of good complementary wingers. Zegras has been a stud for them. Cam York has taken a step back up this season. Like they're actually really good defensively. And they have like enough juice at forward now to be able to score more than, you know, two goals every single game. That's a team that I would be a little more bullish on. But it's more of like that situation with Torts a few years ago. They're not playing Michkov out there all the time. Like they have him playing like third line minutes because they're trying to win games. So it might be hurting his development a little bit, but Brink, Forrester, Kate, these guys are coming on. So that's a team. I think that team is a piece or two away from being really good, actually. I think that their rebuild, they've built like a pretty decent foundation. So that's a team I could see making the playoffs, but the Blue Jackets and Penguins are the teams that I would probably bet on to eventually slip. And who else are we missing? Oh, the Rangers. Yeah, we should talk about them.
Honest, can I be honest as in regards to the Metro as a whole? No one really scares you outside of the top two, like Capitals and Canes, and then it's everyone else. I'm not scared of anyone. Like, we don't go into Philly and play them, and I'm like, oh, it's going to be a tough game. We're going to lose. Like, I really feel that we have a chance against anyone other than Carolina and Washington. I really do. Like no one's that good in this division. Devils should be, right? On paper, the Devils are, but the Devils are also built like paper and they're hurt every year. So that one doesn't matter. We'll see. And then the Rangers are old and slow. Like I watch them play. They're so unimpressive. They really are. Like I get why the fans are upset. Like you look at their record. It does not match the online fan reaction.
You know why? It's because they're literally the Islanders from last year where, you know, they'll go on these stretches where they'll look terrible and everyone will want the GM fired and to trade everyone. And then, you know, they'll have that 5-game winning streak backed by Shesterkin just carrying the team. And, you know, then they're like, okay, we're in this weird spot. Do we buy because we're so old and we're already screwed or do we sell everyone and fire everyone? So that's a team I enjoy, like the ups and downs watching their fans because I don't know, they're in no man's land right now.
Yeah, whether they do it or not, they kind of need to take a step back to take a step forward overall, and I'm not sure they're going to do it because Drury kind of needs to win.
Bro, Drury is going to make the most egregious deadline trade you've ever seen.
You think so?
100%.
I could see like an Alex Tuch type deal for them. I like him as a player, but he's not putting them over.
Yeah, I mean, for Drury, the tracks. Yeah, let me just pay a 30-year-old and a 7 by fucking 11 or 12.
I like Tuck as a player, but I wouldn't trade. I wouldn't give up assets for him right in their position or our position.
I don't know if I'm a fan of Mike Sullivan either. He doesn't seem to have a leash with his younger players, and this team just seems like it's heading nowhere fast. They could make the playoffs with like the upside of Panarin and getting carried, but these guys, they're another team where they play their top six like 20 minutes a night every night, and those players at the end of last year, they ran out of gas, so I wouldn't be surprised if that happens again.
But the goalie is the one thing that always keeps them in it, right?
That is true.
He's always going to keep them in it. And that's the one thing, too, if they do make the playoffs, that's what scares you in the playoff series playing against them, that he could just take over a game. He's done it before. So,
yeah.
I agree with Ethan's take, too. Like, if they're in it, they kind of have to go for it, right? Panarin's in a contract year. All these – Zibanejad signed till forever. Miller signed till forever. Lafreniere signed till forever. Like, you got to go with it with these guys.
Yeah,
100%.
But not our problem.
All right, Ilya Sorokin. He is currently second in goals saved above expected, 19.8, only second to Logan Thompson of the Capitals. He has been lights out practically since November. And I think we are legitimately in Vezina territory right now.
We are.
Quite frankly, if the award was given today, I think he wins it. I think even if this all keeps up in like the top five, kind of stays the same with Logan Thompson, Sorokin, Swayman, Shesterkin, like especially with the injuries to Vasilevsky, with Hellebuck, I kind of would be like running to the window right now to bet Sorokin Vezina. Like, if he finishes the season healthy, like, I don't see who else could win it.
The thing is, though, they have to make the playoffs to really make his case.
I don't know if they necessarily do. Like, if they miss by like a couple points.
I looked it up after you said they got to make the playoffs, though, when we were discussing this a bit privately. There hasn't been a Vezina winning goalie that didn't make the playoffs in a long, long time. I believe it was Kiprusoff in like 06. That's the last one.
Again. So
it's really hard. Not that it's right. Like, I don't agree with that. Like, in other sports, like the Cy Young, all these other things, you could win without making the playoffs if you're just
But it's like a correlation versus causation thing. It's like, all right, if you're winning the Vez, like, listen, he very well could get a majority of these starts, and if he keeps up this pace right now, like, the Islanders are going to make the playoffs because of him. Like, this decor is improved, but they're not good, and this offense is lacking scoring. So, like, if they make the playoffs, 100%.
But it's funny too, because a few years ago when Ullmark won over him, they had Swayman, who's just as good.
Right.
And Sorokin literally carried the Isles to the playoffs that year. And they gave it to Ullmark, who had that when they had that record. I know they had a record year and whatever else, but it's funny. In that scenario, they took it from Sorokin, and now Sorokin might not get it if this team doesn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
But you're right. If they make it, it's probably because he's playing that well and he's carrying them. So they go hand in hand here. They do go hand in hand here because, as you said, it's going to be him carrying them. And if he could truly carry them, then he deserves the Vezina. And if they're on the outside looking in, that I'm not saying he would fall off completely, but that might mean the numbers went down just a bit and it started catching up to them relying on Sorokin as much as they have.
Jack?
Yeah, he's been incredible this season. Before the year, I picked him to have a really good bounce back season, and it was just because a few years ago we saw it, and then an injury happened in the beginning of the last season. The year before that, he had an off season. The variance in goaltending sometimes is just mysterious and makes no sense, and that's what we're seeing. He's just back, and it just takes a couple of
mental health coaches.
Yeah, maybe a couple mental health coaches, maybe just like a few games where the defense plays their best games that they have in years in front of him. And he's a really weird goalie. I like when this is going to sound actually crazy. My confidence builds when the game starts and a minute or two in, he makes his first high danger save of the night instead of he hasn't faced a shot yet. Like, when he faces a few good looks early on and he makes those saves, that's when the team gets rolling. He is he's the heartbeat of the team in a way also. Definitely one of the most five important players. And if he went down, it would be all over, I think. But
yes, just I agree.
100%.
Happy good, for good him.
Good attitude too. Like, he's never high or never too low. He wins a huge game. He's like, just try to make a stop. Maybe I'll look at the records in 20 years. And if he has a terrible game, he's kind of the same way for the most part this season. So whatever they're doing is going well. So just hope it continues.
He's been the goalie for a lottery team, a team winning playoff series, getting pulled from playoff series. Like he's been through a lot in his young NHL career. So he, for him to pass Chico Resch in an Islanders goaltending record is pretty incredible stuff. So congrats to him, and just got to hope he continues it, because if he does, we're looking at a very fun season.
Did he tie or pass?
He might have.
I think he tied, right? I think he tied, but that's kind of crazy he tied that record, considering how much history this team has during the glory days. You would think that number would be unattainable. So truly impressive that he has tied the shutout record and likely surpass it by a very good amount.
Yeah, and Ethan and I were sitting up here asking if the Islanders were going to have one shutout this season. I remember at like the end of October, and thanks to us, I think that they've literally...
Well, he was genuinely awful to start the season.
Jack, who said they would.
You did? I don't remember. Yes. I just remember being like, I didn't even think they were going to have one, but also Riddick even has a shutout this year.
Riddick's been good. And
he's been really good.
As a for a back, like, you have to hold him to a backup standard, too.
For a backup, he's been more than good. For a backup, he's been excellent.
Not Varley, but he's very good.
He's been excellent.
Agreed.
And again, like, I want to reiterate, he was awful to start the season. Like, he has turned it around in a major way.
Yeah. None of us are arguing that.
No. Okay. The power play. It's almost unfathomable as an Islanders fan to look at these power play percentages and see that the Islanders are not dead last. Like, it's bad. They're currently 29th in power play percentage, 14.3. It's shocking to even think that there are fan bases that have to watch a worse power play than we do.
It must be like.
We've spoken about it.
Yeah.
I mean, should I throw up the picture, Rocco, and you could talk over it for a sec?
Yeah, throw it up.
We spoke about this last episode. I yelled about this last episode, and we got it the very next game.
Yeah. So once now the clip is up. We were saying on the last episode, if you watch closely, teams now see in the scouting report that you just have to cover Horvat in that bumper position. And we discussed last episode how much these defenses are collapsing on them. And I didn't even realize it was this bad. This still shot is literally insane. You see all four D-men.
Within three feet.
Three of them literally on top and the other a stick length away. So for those of you watching on YouTube, you see this picture. This is absurd coverage in this situation, especially considering the current puck carrier is one of your best players in Barzal. So basically, when you see this still shot, who's over on the far side? Is that Shabanov?
That's Shabanov. Like, yeah, he could not be more open. They are telling you.
Is that Lee?
Behind the net?
Yeah.
Is that I can't even see. It doesn't even matter.
Let's say it's Lee.
But Heinemann.
What this says, Horvat's right there. Obviously, it's a very tough pass to Shabanov to get through all these sticks, all these skates. But basically, this sort of collapsing on the bumper spot is the defense telling you, we don't respect anyone's shot other than this guy right in the middle. And that's a huge issue for our power play. Because
can you imagine any team leaving Ovechkin that as wide open as Shabanov
is? Never. Because if by some miracle that puck gets across, it's a goal. And Shabanov's got a pretty good shot, but it's just they're challenging them. They're saying, we're not going to let Horvat beat us. We're going to have eyes on Chafe up top. And other than that, we're not really scared of anyone's shot. For all the skill Barzal has, you're just not really afraid of his shot. Lee's a good net front presence, but he's not doing too much with the puck. And Shabanov's kind of a bit of an unknown. So it just shows you how little fear our power play puts into these other teams. The penalty kill literally completely collapses on Horvat, and it makes it nearly impossible for him to get a shot off. And that's kind of why I think not that they've dipped tremendously, but that's a little bit why his numbers have probably dipped, because he doesn't even get a look on the power play because they're just all surrounding him.
No, I mean, we were screaming about this last episode.
Yes, they literally said, watch the next game. And sure enough, there's a still shot.
I was screaming at my TV when I got that screenshot. I mean, I was in the Discord like screaming, someone get a screenshot. Someone get a screenshot. Like, I was furious. And the worst part is that, as we said previously, they figured out the zone entries because they have Schaefer now. And when you have Schaefer and Barzal on power play one, like, you're going to be able to move the puck. You're going to be able to get it through the neutral zone. You do the cutesy drop pass, pass it to the wall on the blue line, enter the zone, set up, no problem. When this team inevitably gets shut down like this, they get frustrated. And they start, like, have individual players, most notably Matt Barzal. It infuriates me to no end when, after, you know, a minute or so goes by in the power play, and they don't have a single quality look, and the zone gets cleared, and they start taking it up, they abandon the successful zone entries. And you just get Schaefer turning it over at the blue line, Barzal turning it over at the blue line. Like, you can tell that they themselves are getting frustrated. And that makes it even worse, more unwatchable. It's mind-boggling.
The only way you get it to Horvat when they're honing in on him like that, too, is quick puck movement. It's got to be bing-bang, tic-tac-toe, and you get it to Horvat, he shoots.
But or Matt Barzal decides, hey, I'm a fucking unbelievable player, and starts taking it to the net more frequently.
Right.
Then people have to pinch.
And we've said this on previous episodes. The fix isn't on the roster right now.
No.
You need a better version of Lee down low. As good as Lee is net front, he can't do much aside from that. So you're literally just planting him there and hoping for deflections. And then that other side, we hope Chabanov can maybe become it, but I don't know if he'll be that. You want that type of guy that we basically are projecting Cole Yzerman to be, right? That super shooter that you have to respect and you cannot leave open like that. So hopefully it comes. It's going to be on Darsh to figure it out. But, man, that's the easiest power play to defend maybe I've ever seen.
Jack, any thoughts?
I have one crazy idea, but I don't think we're in crazy territory yet.
We are. Go ahead.
When Schaefer and D'Angelo are on the ice together, they just dominate their minutes. Just try it. Two defensemen.
Where do you put D'Angelo?
Put him and Schaefer both on the points. Barzal.
You going box?
Barzal, I'm putting on the right. Barzal, I'm putting on one of the half walls. I'm putting Horvat out there. And who's my third?
Shabanov or Drew?
My third. Yeah, I said we're getting kind of crazy. My third is Heinemann. Just rip it. Like, I trust his shot from wherever on the ice, honestly, more than anyone on this team almost, except for Palmieri and Horvat at this point. And we all know Palmieri ain't coming back.
But even, Heinemann could move too, right? That's something you need on the power play as well. I feel like we sometimes underrate that because just like, oh, put Lee in front of the net, put this guy here, put this guy there. You need guys that can move. When you watch the really good power plays, when we play against Colorado, obviously they have crazy high-level players, but they just move. Constant movement, puck movement, feet are moving, everything's moving. We get kind of stagnant, and it's just
– very stagnant.
It's rough.
Yeah, okay. It's not a fun watch. I'm glad that they somehow pulled out. We needed Cal Ritchie to go between his legs on a four-minute power play.
I don't know how it took this long to discuss that. That was sick.
That was nasty. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got five goals. He's got you know what I really like about Richie real quick? All of his points, when you look at them,
they're not empty calorie.
Well, it's not that we could save the empty calorie jokes. Like, they're pretty, like, they're fun to watch. Like, he never gets like a secondary assists. Like, all of his points at this level have been earned, and he looks awesome over the last stretch of games. So I hope that continues, and we'll see where that puts him in the lineup upon a few returns, which we'll get to later.
Yeah, kids look good.
All right, what are we calling our TikTok segment?
Isles Talk.
Isles Talk?
I thought Talk and Isles, but...
That's right. That's what it was. It was Talk and Isles. All right, let's hear from Uncle Mel.
I want to quickly talk about the Islands of Colorado and the Tampa game. On the Colorado game, I'm sure you're all aware that they're the second team to beat Colorado. Colorado only lost one game, and they made Colorado look like a bunch of chumps. It's amazing how the Islanders could do. And the other game against Tampa, they played great. So you're talking now about a team that played two top teams, and they looked like they were the top team. And I think they are. Over and out.
Hell yeah, dude.
Uncle Mel, over and out. All right, so Uncle Mel thinks that they're a top team. Who am I to disagree?
Now, I'll tell you one thing. Parking's not top tier for Uncle Mel.
No, we're going to work on that.
Yes.
We're going to get that. Yeah.
No, got to love the Uncle Mel respect.
Yeah.
You want to respect from your elders, and Islanders are earning.
So this next and last video, this was making its rounds, came up on my TikTok, and I saw some people discussing it in the Discord. I don't know how viral it made its way on Isles Twitter, but I thought this was very funny. Let's take a look at this.
Of course, yeah.
Can you take a picture? I mean, we're huge.
What's up, girls? Are you guys shopping?
Yeah.
Can we do it? Can we do it? I have my wrist. Can we do it the other way? My wrist is kind of hidden.
Thank you. We're huge fans. You want a picture?
Sure.
So
that's, yeah.
I mean, find me a more Lou Lamoriello Isles moment than that. Matt Barzell having to switch sides in a fan picture while shopping in Manhattan to hide a broken wrist.
It's incredible stuff right there.
And you know what? All of a sudden, Lou wants to do podcasts and be heard and whatever. A little bit of a hypocrite, that Lou.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
And by the way, I just to throw this out there, you know how like we used to joke, you know, Lou's going to send the black car outside your house and someone DM'd me the other day and they were just like, yo, like, I know you were joking, but like you weren't far off.
What do you mean?
Like he was not a fan of mine.
I'm sure he wasn't.
Yeah. So, all right, let's get to some questions.
He keeps tabs. We know that. Let's see.
All he's got to do is pick up the secret phone with the red wire and give me a call. Talk it over.
Okay. First question up is Dan Schaefer. Which Isles prospect do you expect to have their stock rise the most this year in the World Juniors?
Oh, that is a great question. I already know what the answer is. I already know.
Well, I'm actually – so this isn't just who's going to be the best. It's their stock rising.
Yeah, like who's – like who everyone's going to be talking about.
I'm gonna say
– there's one answer.
I know who your answer is going to be, and I'm not going to say that.
I don't think you know.
I know. You might. I know who yours is. Okay. But I'm going to say –
I know who you're going to say.
Well, I'm going to say two. I'm going to say Victor Eklund.
I knew that's who you're going to
pick. Well, you're not going to know the next one. But Victor Eklund, just because he plays for a team in Sweden, professional league. A lot of what people don't understand is whether they're about to be drafted or newly drafted, these guys in these European leagues do not get a ton of run. So sometimes we look at their numbers and it's like zero goals, zero goals, zero goals. But if you look at them, it's like 10 minutes a night, 11 minutes a night. They really rely on their vets, and it's very much like a respect thing in these leagues that the veterans get the run time. So when you see guys like Frundell and Eklund not getting a ton of time and their numbers aren't crazy, that's why. I think this is going to be a big chance for Eklund to pop. Sweden's forward group is loaded. They're sick. They got Stenberg.
Yep.
We have
Eklund.
York, who's going to be up there. They have Frundell, who was number three last year. They have Eklund, who we drafted high last year, and a bunch of other good guys. I think Eklund's going to pop. And my other surprise is actually a lot of people were surprised he even made Team USA. Jacob Kwasnica. I actually think seventh round pick for us. I actually think if he gets a chance to get in some games, he's going to impress. He's put up some highlight reel goals this year. Got a really nice one the other night. I think he might have walked J.P. Hurlburt, who's going to be a first-round pick this year. So
not with that name.
Well, Kwasnica, sleeper. Eklund's the obvious one. Kwasnica is the sleeper. And now we'll let Ethan talk about Aitchison.
Yeah, it's Aitchison. And I don't even think it's close. He is just the definition of rock star. And if he is putting up points, obviously it's going to be much tougher competition than he's facing in the OHL. But as a defenseman, if he is scoring goals and he's getting minutes and he's laying big hits and just doing rock star shit, like he's just a guy who, like, the hype is going to be out of this world. Like, I'm envisioning halfway through the tournament, everyone's going to be like, how did this guy go? What did he go? 17?
16 or 17.
16, 17. That's going to be the narrative around Aitchison.
You know, this is going to sound very geeky of me, but what I want to see with Aitchison is how he defends, because we know he has the offensive game. We know he likes to win. I want to see him defend against like a higher level of talent than he plays against typically.
Yeah.
Completely agree. My sleeper is Kamil Bednarik. He was a second-round draft pick back in 2024. He must be impressing over at Boston University to get a spot on this team. So given the question of stock rising, I'll go with him as my sleeper.
He's gotten some first-line run at BU recently too. So he's definitely upped his game enough. So very good pick, Jack.
There we go. Gillette. Isles have only scored 14 goals in the last eight games. Pageau has missed had 71 through 21 games with him. I understand the Palmieri injury is in there as well, but do you think he's an underrated piece for this team? I mean, Gillette, you know, I call him the director of player development.
I've never been more on board with a nickname in my life than when Jack called Pageau the director of player development.
Very good nickname.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of weird too, because I feel like Pageau's the guy that always misses like the grade A opportunities, but maybe we're undervaluing the amount he does score. He's like a half point per game player.
Think deeper. He balances the lines.
That's the key.
Well, this is exactly the reason why I didn't think he was going to get traded in the offseason and didn't have to eat a shoe at Cafe Dolce Vita, is because of what Jack specifically said. Half point per game, 3 Cs, don't grow on trees. And like Rocco said, it allows you roster flexibility. If you're down in a game and you want to throw Barzal up with Horvat on line one, then you have a 20-year-old rookie centering line two. Right. Not when you have the director of player development out there.
It's not the direct scoring from him. It's how he
kills penalties and he sets people up. Like, yeah. He's just a great center.
He takes the heat off other people in other regards that allows them just to go out and score.
Yeah.
He'll go down as one of the more underrated players on this team of the last 5 years, just because of all the things we mentioned that don't always seem like the most important, like balancing the lineup, also, allowing flexibility. It just all goes untalked about.
He's also going to be, whether we want, we don't have to talk about it now, but he's also just going to be the most interesting topic come March.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Especially if Richie continues on his little run here. Chris Kea, hypothetical. Do you guys think if we made the Horvat trade before the back-to-back Eastern Conference Finals runs, the exact same trade? So no Bo, no first, and no pick that becomes Ratu. Would we have a Stanley?
No Bo Villiers, you meant.
Yeah. Yeah. He said he wrote Bo, but would we have a Stanley Cup?
That's such a good question.
We'll never know, but the year we took them to seven, I feel like maybe, right? Because that's.
I think the answer is absolutely yes.
I think we I find disagree. A way.
Jack, Leo Komarov was playing first line minutes.
No, but I don't think you realize how hot Beauvillier was. He was really good in those playoffs. I roast the guy for after the playoffs, but during those runs, he was a major part.
I get it. He's a 16-game player. But Bo Horvat's a 30-goal scorer.
Bo Horvat is too, though. And he's just better.
Like I'm sorry, but people don't talk about it anymore because we're over it. But like, the biggest what if Bleep. For what
is it Bleep State?
No, it's not. It's what didn't happen after he left.
Panarin.
Yeah, the Islanders have at least one Stanley Cup if Artemi Panarin signs with the New York Islanders.
Do they have a Stanley Cup if Bleep stays?
It's a good question.
If he stays and you get to keep probably too, they do have a Stanley.
I actually think because the way everything worked out, if you were to give me one of the two options, I would have had Panarin come because like they
Same.
It was like the us against the world mentality, and then if you could have got Panarin and built off it, where if Bleep stayed,
you mean back to back Eastern Conference
our guy. Like if Bleep stayed, I don't even know if we're as good as we were.
I've talked about so many times over the years, like with Trotz's system, like people like to say like, oh, like back when, you know, Trotz was in Washington, like he made Ovechkin play defense. No, he didn't. It's a myth. Ovechkin did what Ovechkin did, which is score goals. And you can take a team like structured, like Trotz likes to structure things very far when you have like high end individuals, which the Islanders were missing. Which is, in my opinion, the reason that they never won a cup going to those back-to-back Eastern Conference Finals. They were missing that super high-end piece, that score that they could rely on. Artemi Panarin was it. Him not coming here, I hope that motherfucker never wins a cup. He's on the list, so he's not going to. But that was
question.
It's the biggest what-if in Islanders history the last 10 years.
I asked you this a while ago, but what happens if a member of the list ends up on the Islanders? Are they removed from the list? Or are you going to just decide that
it's circumstantial?
All right, we'll see.
It's circumstantial. Do it, like, you're on the list if you personally spurn me. Like, are you going to come groveling back and apologize and really apologize?
These people don't know you, so I don't think they're going to come groveling back.
No, they'll grovel.
All right, well.
The people are aware of the list. Has there ever been anything more powerful in NHL history than the list? No one's won a cup on that list. The list has been in existence for over 5 years. And there's a lot of people on the list. Like, this is a spread out list. People on all different teams.
You have them.
I'd have to go back and look. But I mean, I haven't added to the list in a while because I don't. There hasn't really been like an opportunity. But the last person to make the list was probably Parisi.
Trivia question. Which Islander from those runs has the most career playoff points in their careers?
Is it Bailey?
No.
Well, from those runs, who has the most, like, so they were on the Eastern Conference Finals teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Who has the most total points?
Who has the most total points in their individual career on players on those teams?
Is it Corbilia?
No. He's on the current team.
Let me think.
Lee? It's not Lee.
No.
But you're asking overall player, like their whole career, who has the
whole career. Who's been the best playoff performer quantitatively?
I'm trying to think of someone that was like good on another team and with us. It's not Horvat. Well, Horvat wasn't here yet. It's not I don't think it's Barzal because that would be too obvious.
Hold on.
Palmieri?
No. Good guess.
He's on those teams. Wow.
All right.
I shouldn't be as stumped as I am.
Remember that guy who scored 4 goals against the Rangers in one game? JG Pageau has 51, one more than Brock Nelson and Josh Bailey.
And he had that when he was on Ottawa. He went crazy that one playoffs.
Yeah, he had 4 goals in a game against the Rangers.
Yeah, I should have got that. Good question, Jack.
I thought it'd be a fun one since you were just talking about how it's underrated. Josh Elkin. Way too early predictions of Maxim Shabanov's next contract.
Is he up after this year or next year?
This year. I think he's on a 1-year prove it.
It's going to be a bridge, I'd imagine.
Not going to be a lot.
No, nothing crazy.
The Holmstrom contract from this year. Plus
that's what I'm thinking, like 4.
What did he get?
2 point something or 3.
How many years?
Oh, it was in the 3s for sure. At least the 3s.
How many years? I could see like a
2 year,
3 by 4 with the rising cap.
Ethan's right. 2 years.
3.625.
Yeah.
I'll say that's like, I think 4 for Shabanov is kind of fair.
Yeah. Probably rising cap.
Yep. 4. 2, 3 years.
More important skills.
For AAV.
Yeah. Robert, could Jonathan Drouin, 16 team no trade clause be moved for assets this year at the deadline if the team continues to play well in his absence?
I didn't realize he had a 16 team.
I feel like
I think next year it's open. I think.
I feel like he is one of the more expendable forwards and won't be in this
team. Very expendable.
Long
term. So. I think it's the opposite of the question, though. I think we'd look to move him if we were out, not if we're in. You know, like.
I agree.
I think. If we're in and looking to make a run, you keep him as a depth piece, and you could figure out what to do with him next year when he has 1 year left. I think.
Yeah.
I don't think he becomes more expendable. I think you hold on to him to make your run, especially you're down Palmieri. You've seen Pageau get hurt, so I think you'd keep him.
It's funny what wins do to fans. No disrespect, Robert, but they haven't scored more than 2 or 3 goals in any of these wins recently, except for the Colorado game. And the luxury that Drouin gives you is you don't have to experiment guys like Siplikov, Holmstrom, Duclair. They don't have to live in your top 6 when you have a player like him who only belongs there and who's actually been pretty good there. So he's been pretty good, Ethan. Like when he was playing with Bo Horvat at the beginning of the season, he was awesome. I don't know why he was moved away from him. I think that's a mistake. Heinemann, too, is not looking as great as he was with Drouin in the beginning of the year. So that's my take on it. I don't look at him as expendable for your ceiling of this season. Overall, long term, obviously, yes, he's expendable.
And I think, too, the Drouin and Palmieri deals are 2 years with intent, because I think they're looking at their top prospects like Eiserman, like Eklund, and saying, hopefully, if all works out properly, that these guys will take those roles and we don't have to go out and spend a ton of money. It's just our homegrown guys will be ready to go.
Right.
Took a lot of self-control using Siplikov's name and not Lee's, by the way, who's lived there and has probably 5 or 6 goals this season.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah.
Speaking of, Dom, will Ethan openly admit that Siplikov looks better with Barzal than Holmstrom did?
All right. Here's the thing.
He has.
I have. And I've spent the last 2 weeks openly shitting on Simon Holmstrom because I'm a man who can admit when he was wrong, unlike Dom, who refuses to admit that Noah Dobson stinks.
Fair enough.
Just kidding. I love you, Dom. I love you as much as Simon Holmstrom loves not shooting the puck.
But Ethan, you can say out loud that Sip has looked better next to Barzal.
Oh, yeah, he has.
Yeah, he's looked pretty good next to him. Nothing crazy.
Again, it's like the bar is so low. He has looked better. But, like, I don't think that there's ever been a worse bet made in the history of bets than
me and Jack. Well, if they counted third assists, he would have had one yesterday. So, I'm basically...
I mean, listen, if they counted a lot of things, I know.
We might have to start counting third assists just so we have some numbers to go off.
So true. But the follow-up question isn't actually from Data Dom. It's from Stephen B9. Why is Simon Holmstrom so lost?
I don't know. There's no answer to it. Go ahead. Would love to hear your theory.
It's a boring answer because we've spent so much time talking about it already, but it's due to the loss of the director of player development. His absence.
Yeah, I mean, that hurts.
Wasn't it before that?
A little bit, just a little bit, but it was pretty bad. And the issue is I think Patrick Waugh and the Islanders organization wants this player to be what Ethan projected and hoped he would be in the beginning of the season, which is a 60-point guy. You draft him in the first round. You know, you want to see him capitalize on the opportunities he's given. I mean, he was with Horvat yesterday, apparently. He was with Barzal for weeks. And he just, from an instinctively offensive perspective, I just don't see it as a guy that's going to consistently bury 20 goals. I thought he was lucky to reach that last year with 4 empty netters. And, you know, he still does good things around the ice. Like, I don't care what his metrics say, actually, on that side of the puck, because he's a pain in the ass to play against. Like, he's always on somebody's stick. He's always in their face. I respect that part of his game. But as for the loss side offensively, I mean, he had a 2-on-1 the other night where he passes the puck into a Tampa Bay player. And a couple of weeks ago, Richie set him up for a 2-on-1 and he shot it right at the goalie's pads. And, like, you know, you start to go in a drought where you haven't had a point since the New York State election. You're going to start questioning every move you make. So I think that he's lost a bit of confidence, and that's the last thing you want to see.
I think, too, if you're – and this is no disrespect to Pageau, but if your excuse is when your third-line center goes down –
Right, it's not good.
There's something off there. Holmstrom reeks of a player that's going to get thrown into a bigger trade this offseason. That's what he feels like to me.
Yeah, which at this point is fine.
We'll see if it works out in Buffalo.
Like I don't know, man. Like, yeah, he's been bad. He missed a couple games. Maybe he's got an injury, but like,
he's got to be
awful. He's been so bad.
He's not been good.
Hey, Lupo, 8897. Do you think that us not blowing leads is an actual system thing, or just the regression of us blowing leads at an extreme measure? It seems like they've just been lucky the puck hasn't bounced into the net on some of these 6-on-5s. Good question.
Really good. I don't know the answer. I really don't. I mean, like, it's the ending of these games have not been pretty.
No, but they're honestly, can we say maybe it's just Sorokin playing so well?
I think
I agree. Yeah. No, when you have a Vezina level goalie, he's making big time saves, and that's what we've gotten from him this season.
Which I don't think it wasn't this Tampa game. Was it the previous one where they had us hemmed in for like 2.5 minutes trying to tie the game and they couldn't score yet? Like, they say your best penalty killer is your goalie, right? So, like, in those situations, he's been our best player. Along with another player, Pellick, has been so good this year. Like, when you have your best defensive defenseman playing to that level, it helps in those regards. So I think it's a mix of a better system not having Lane Lambert as your coach and Sorokin playing so well.
Completely agree. Scuds, love Heinemann, and you don't trade a player like him. But do we think it's time to break up him and Bo? Also, please keep Holmstrom out of the top six forever.
No, I wouldn't break them up. I think it's just, it's, you know, the shooting percentage was
unsustainable.
It was always going to go down, but I think you keep them together. They got at least, like, I would say 5 more games together, and if it looks real bad, then you could switch it, but they've earned playing together a little bit longer, I think. They were just so good at the beginning that the expectations maybe are a little too high now.
I have this crazy idea about them. Remember when Drouin was playing with them when they were scoring a lot? And then remember when they took him and put him with Barzell and nobody scored? They should go back to putting Drouin on his wing just because they'll probably score more goals. That's why I think they're struggling. I think they're missing that. I think they're missing
that on here. That was a nicely set up line because you have the two-way guy in Horvat. You have the playmaker in Drouin and like the workhorse in Heinemann. I'd be totally fine if they went back to that line.
It's kind of crazy that they weren't going back to it even before Drouin's injury, but when he is back, I hope to see that. Kevin, now that he's broken his podcast seal, chances we get Lou on the show. I'm half kidding. We'll do all we can, Kevin.
What if Lou just comes on the like we're expecting Ethan
pops in,
and then Lou just pops in and goes, Ethan's not with us anymore. That's the only way I could see Lou on the show.
You know what? If that did happen, please post the episode.
We're definitely posting that episode. Right, so, one as evidence, two just because.
Yeah,
we need to.
James, out of all the potential long-term trade targets like EP40 and Tage Thompson, etc., you guys have heard about, mentioned, dreamed about, which one is most ideal for your vision of the future team, and what's the ideal / realistic package to get it done?
So is it between those two guys or anyone?
I think anyone. Those are the two examples.
So a forward in his 20s that has all-star pedigree.
I mean, Tage is my guy. But I mean, we always say this, though, on this pod, and it's so true. Like, if one of these younger forwards shake loose and become available, like if there's a Paterka-esque guy that becomes available, why not go get someone like him, right? Who's younger, maybe fits the window a little more, but we don't know who that is yet. So I'll just go with Thompson. And the package, a lot. I couldn't even. Like whatever Quinn Hughes is going to go for type package.
I think it's top level players.
Prospect, rather.
I mean, it's Tage for me, and I think the package is 2 firsts, Yzerman, another like AB prospect, a second. I think it's like a 5-piece deal.
Yeah, it's big. And then maybe.
And it's because of the Tage contract. He's got like 3 more years left at 7. It's the best contract in the NHL probably.
Yeah, and it's one of those deals too because you're taking on $7 million, and if that's the case, the Buffalo team's probably going into a rebuild. You probably have to throw like a money piece in there too just to even things out.
Yeah.
Like a Duke, not saying him, he should go, but like maybe a Duclair type or Drouin type has to be thrown in the deal just to make it work money-wise.
Believe it or not, I actually think I'm leaning back to Elias Pettersson, and it's only because I know that that trade package won't be as rough to the pool of picks and futures that this
team has. That is true.
Because he's got, what, an $11.5 million contract, and he played one side of the puck. He's playing at an elite level right now. It's more of like a buy-low opportunity, and I just – with Tage, it's like – I like what the Islanders are building. They might not get the first overall pick again. They might not get a top 10 pick, but they have a bunch of draft capital. They have a general manager who's able to identify that Emil Heinemann has potential to be a first line winger. I kind of have a little bit of faith in Darsh to find some forwards in the draft, continue to hold on to your assets a little bit. I don't know if I'm for the whole let's trade a haul and get Tage Thompson. I'm concerned about like who's going to be Schaefer's long-term partner. Like it's just, I don't know if all the pieces are there to just splash in for some really dynamic player right now, but if they were to pull it off,
drafts away realistically.
If they were going to pull it off, though, I'll be the last one complaining.
Yeah, Tage is an exception for me. Like, I agree with you on the not wanting to give up that much, Jack, but he's the level I would make an exception for. And I agree with you on EP2. The only thing is that contract is so inflated that if it doesn't go well, you fuck up your retool, rebuild, whatever you want to call it, much worse than the Tage trade would.
He didn't play last game, and they won their first game in at least five games. And, like, all right, 24-year-old EP put up 102 points in 80 games. I don't know if we're ever getting that EP40 again.
Put it this way. If we're getting EP40 and they want actual assets in that deal, like high-priced assets, I'd want them to take, like, Romanov, too, to take the sting out of it a little bit. Like,
yeah.
You take this 6.25 and we'll take the 11.6 plus give you assets, but just to be a little safer on our end, you have to take some money off the books because we're taking so much if you're not eating
right.
And Vancouver's really desperate right now.
And like, honestly, though, if Vancouver is going to trade Quinn and they trade EP, that's a ton of money off the books, and they might need some money on their books just to, you know, they want to go full rebuild, get it to the floor. I know they have a lot of money contracts, but you're talking about Quinn Hughes leaves. If EP was to leave, maybe other guys would start leaving. Maybe they would take some contracts back just to have some players. So
yeah,
that would be a very interesting deal. I think
warm bodies.
Yeah. Like PLD-esque. Remember when they just wanted to get rid of PLD? I think it would be kind of that sort of deal.
Yeah. The thing is with EP42 selfishly, if you brought him in now, and you're able to, you know, now suddenly you could put him at the center position, put Barzal right back with Horvat. You're going to have like a really good top six in all likelihood. And, you know, the defense is kind of rounding into form, but, you know, that's where the risk comes in. Cause like this defense is playing well right now, but they're an injury away from being a bad unit again. I really think every single piece is important to hold together right now. Moving on to the next question, Thomas Boyle. Who do you see coming out of the lineup when Pageau and Drouin return?
It's a great question. Sip.
McLean. You know who I think should stay? Who I thought's
Gackholm?
Gackholm has low-key been good on the floor.
Yeah.
Like, he should stay in, I think. I think McLean comes out before Gackholm, in my opinion.
So McLean out. Tsipikov out?
I don't really want to take a lot of people. I mean, I would sit Holmstrom for like a game or two.
I agree.
I don't think they would, but
that's the thing. He kills penalties and he's, you know, good defensively. So I don't think that they would.
Yeah, but it would be, especially with Pageau back. So I think numbers game would tell you it would be McLean and Gackholm, but Gackholm's been so well. I think it might force their hand to put Tsipikov back down, or maybe someone else gets a health bomb just to wake them up.
I'm going to go with Holmstrom and Gackholm. For whatever reason, they love Kyle McLean. And Holmstrom, Wah is really driven on points. And Holmstrom has obviously none in a long time. And Tsipikov, he actually was the play driver of their goal yesterday, and that line has looked pretty good with him in there. So I think that he's going to leave him in to try to give him an opportunity. But at the same time, Tsipikov to me is one bad game away from getting literally waived. And you know who you made a comment earlier in the show. This is kind of not on subject, but you were talking about Ethan Bear, and you're like, oh, he's got to like lose weight or whatever. But Boqvist has been so bad this year.
So bad.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's waived and they keep Ethan Bear as their seventh defenseman. What do you guys think?
I think it makes no sense. I think they just give Marshall Warren a chance.
Or what about because it's like if you give Marshall Warren the chance, or if you want to give someone a shot on the right side, if Tony D sits a game, what about this kid McWhort? Hasn't he been really good at Bridgeport so far? That right-handed defenseman? He was at the beginning of the year. He might be close to getting a shot too. Unless he really fell off. I haven't looked at the Bridgeport numbers, but you got the kid McWhort, you got George, you got Warren. Yeah, I could see Boqvist kind of getting out of here soon.
By the way, I forget where I think I said this in Discord. Travis Mitchell, I saw what Travis Mitchell looked like for the first time. Travis Mitchell looks like he works at Spencer's at Roosevelt Field Mall.
I could see it. Or I don't know if you remember this place, Ethan, that Utopia shop in Hicksville.
It's the same vibe.
It's literally the same thing. That is the same owner.
Yeah. Is Spencer still around?
I have no idea, bro. I haven't been to Roosevelt Field.
Yeah, I haven't been to a mall in God. Yeah. It's embarrassing.
Me too. Brady Cook. Wait, is that the Jets quarterback name? Brady Cook?
Or is it Quinn Cook? No, Brady Cook. Brady Cook is the Jets guy.
Yeah. Not for long after yesterday, but one. When Matthew Darche was hired, I think we all generally agreed it would be a 2 to 3 year retool slash rebuild before we would be competitive again. Does Matthew Schaefer exceeding expectations accelerate this timeline?
And a little bit, yes.
By how much?
A couple years. Maybe two. Like 1 year.
One year.
Two. Could Schaefer eventually be the type of player that would attract free agents to come to Long Island to play with him?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, you're seeing.
Like, is Cale Makar make Colorado attractive?
Yeah.
You need to be good around him, too. Yeah. Just be like, oh, Matthew Schaefer's here. If you have Matthew Schaefer and a solid team, like,
yeah.
If Richie becomes good, Eklund becomes good, Iserman becomes good, and Schaefer's just the franchise guy, yes, he can 100% attract players. He's that good.
Probably, like, more appealing to other defensemen.
I would say. But even
other forwards.
Even, like, let's say the day comes where Horvat and Barzal are older, and you need that new forward to come help out on the power play, whatever. Like, that's attractive too, right? Like, just to be the one number one forward along with
a little bit, but it's like, hey, we'll pay you your rate, and also like you don't have the pressure on you.
I think if they want to go after a right-handed free agent defenseman this year, it could be very attractive for a certain defenseman that might be a free agent and right-handed this summer.
Okay.
Ente, who gets glue guy status? I vote Holmstrom or Pageau, not including recent form, but they're both generally really good all around.
Not Holmstrom.
No. Putting Holmstrom in that category is offensive, man.
Who would be like glue guy? Can't be like the top guys, I feel like, because...
Mayfield?
There's one obvious answer.
Is it Pageau?
No. Jack knows the answer.
I'm struggling with this one. Cizikas?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we were beating on. That's what I was saying so hard in the beginning of the season is like he's literally never going to be scratched because he is such a loud voice in the team's room. But apparently, did you guys see that Wah spoke to him
after
one of those games?
Yeah, it was after one game, basically. Just and then Ethan Sears was like, "Oh, what you guys talk about?"
Yeah.
I should have clipped that.
And we said, "What did you and Cizikas? What did you say to Cizikas?" And he goes, "Can you keep a secret?" Well, Waz got some good responses.
He's not like shackled by Lou anymore.
He's quick.
Yeah,
yeah. Patrick Waz had these boys ready to play too. Great year for him.
Maybe he's the glue guy.
Maybe
Jack the Brian. The Bry man's taking us home tonight. Final two questions. One, who do you guys prefer as the sixth defenseman? Warren continues to rack up points in Bridgeport. George, as he gets a few games in, or Mitchell, who seems steady and solid.
I'm going to say Warren, actually.
Yeah, I just think the offensive upside.
Yeah. And he's pretty, I mean, he's not tall, but he's a pretty big dude.
I'm going George here. And that's no surprise, but Warren to me is not ready to defend at the NHL level. And George has something to build on from last year. And I think with everything else rounded out, now that he can truly play a bottom pairing role with a partner like Mayfield, I think he's got the best chance to truly succeed. And we might be asking a lot of questions about Romanov if George comes in and plays the way I think he's capable of.
Yeah.
And honestly, like
who's taking this contract type questions.
If either George or Warren can become a bottom pair, I think that's a huge win for us.
Agreed.
By the way, we're another week later with Romanov and they still haven't given up more than, okay, they gave up 3 goals yesterday on the second half of a back-to-back with their backup goalie, but they're still defending at a pretty high level. It's just
because, and again, you never wish injury on anyone, but like, because of the injury, like, I don't know how you're going to be able to even try to move him.
They are better as a team because he is injured. It's sad. Two, do we like Barzal at center, or do we feel like we need to load up with Barzal on Horvat's wing and give Richie more responsibility when Pageau returns?
Yeah, I think I've made my opinion on it clear last episode. Unfortunately, long run, I see Barzal as more of a winger. I know he likes center. I know that's just been his natural position. But like, I would very much be in favor of putting Pageau or Richie, who cares, 2C, 3C, in Jack's dream scenario, EP 40, 2C, and just throwing Barzal back up with Horvat and letting the magic happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the wing idea is great too, because as we said before, we would put Drouin, Horvat, and Heinemann, and putting Barzal there instead of Drouin is just like a better version of Drouin on that line. So I would probably go with that. Barzal, Horvat, Heinemann at the top, and then run the center straight through, then figure out what you do with everyone come deadline, whenever else.
Here's the problem. Richie does look pretty good recently, but you could still tell that he's growing his game. And when the Islanders go on the road and he's their second line center, he's going up against Slavin. He's going up against their when they're at home, he's getting the hardest matchup. So half the games he's going to be playing against top pair units across the NHL. And when he's on the road, he'll get an easier matchup because they'll be focused on Barzal and Horvat. I still don't know if he's ready for that, and that shouldn't be a slight. I kind of like how they're growing his game a little bit in the bottom six, giving them good minutes, playing with good players. Asking him to take that jump, it's tough. And remember that they're winning while also growing their team for the long term. So I'm good with Barzal being at center and trying to tell him to figure it out, because you don't want to put Richie in that spot right now.
Yeah, and keep in mind on the road, when they see Richie go out, they could put their best center up against him. Like, oh, Horvat's not out right now. Let's test little Rich over here. So
food.
Yeah. Like he's, yeah.
But he's held his own.
He has definitely held his own, but just for development purposes, I like the way Wah has it sorted right now. But we'll see when these guys return. I hope he puts Drouin with Horvat and Heinemann, and we'll see where we'll see what happens with Pageau. Obviously, he's playing.
All right, is that it for the questions?
That does it.
That does it. All right, another episode in the books. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe to the YouTube. Check out the Patreon. Join the Discord. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Where's his Sunday best? Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a night to keep, he can't hang around. Iowa's house in the middle.